It's got a death curse.
Swords have father people like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Guys are back for another show, and so soon. I love it. I honestly don't know who's having more fun with these shows, you or me, because this is better than sitting around the campfire for me. Let's hit it. Our last show featuring the Changeling was a great success. You subscribers catapulted us up to the top 10 spot in the TV film category on Podomatic, and we thank you. This means we're reaching more people and spreading the fear wider than ever. Then once more unto the breach, dear friends. What do we have in store for you this time around?
It's not a bad question, Bert.
For most people, that little clip right there is all you need to know what we'll be talking about here on Horror 101, where we're educating your fears. We're going back to 1985 tonight. Back to the heyday of great fun horror. It's our privilege to feature for you Dan O'Bannon's classic flick, The Return of the Living Dead.
Frank, we have a little problem.
Do you ever fantasize about being killed?
Yeah! The brain! The brain!
I hit the fucking brain!
How do you kill something that's already dead?
Well, how do I know, Fred? I don't know. Let me think.
It's not a bad question, Bert.
That's a heavy mic, eh? That thing's for fucking real.
This is a movie that I remember watching with my brother when we were teenagers. Barely teenagers. I haven't seen this movie in over 20 years.
Really?
Yeah. There's only two things I remember, in fact. Send more paramedics.
Which is great.
And the other thing I remember was in the med lab, in the veterinarian's office, half a dog on a stand.
The split dog!
That's it, coming back to life. Those are the only two
things. Oh, they're gonna kill it! He's beating at you.
I've forgotten everything else, but how do you forget that? You can't forget that. That's like permanent.
You forget everything else about that?
Yeah.
Oh my
really?
God.
You know what? The image that probably sticks in my head the most of this film is the tar man.
The tar man is the one
especially
element.
Especially the view of him through the glass in the bin. And that changeover that happens before your eyes.
Because you watch him melt at the beginning.
That was pretty intense.
Wow, we're getting ahead of ourselves here. I always wanted to believe that everybody had seen Return of the Living Dead. To me, it was a no-brainer. It was like Evil Dead or Nightmare on Elm Street. Everyone's seen it, right? We covered a zombie walk in downtown Windsor a couple years ago, and we interviewed a bunch of people, and I asked this one guy who was older than me, "Have you seen Return of the Living Dead?" And he's like, "No." No? The fuck do you mean no? This was a movie that had a rock-solid cast, a great script filled with laughs, gore, and terror. It broke a ton of undead rules and introduced completely new zombie mechanics. And instead of being shunned for it, it was so great it became a zombie subgenre pioneer whose influences are still imitated today. If you've never seen it, a warning. We are going to spoil the fuck out of this thing, but don't be alarmed, because I've seen this movie 30 times, and it keeps getting better every time I see it. No matter what we disclose, you will want to check this out, I promise. Tonight it's the world-famous Brian Stewart, myself, and the voice, Blake Hillhart.
I didn't know that Brian Stewart had forgotten most of the movie. I thought it was like everybody knew this.
Well, listen, I know this movie very well. I get the feeling that as you begin to watch it, it'll kind of unspool itself from the back of your mind.
Now, this isn't a movie that I used to catch again time and time again. This is a movie that I literally haven't seen any of it in 20 years. Nice.
I was introduced to it by another friend that lived in Leamington, and it was on, I believe, First Choice on 22 at the time.
Yeah.
And he had been telling me about it, and I stayed at his house on that weekend, and it blew my mind, because all the zombie concepts that we know come together in a film. It's descended from the original films. It has a lineage to the original films, right. But it's a separate story. But it references the original films, but it takes it in a new direction.
Oh, okay.
So in 1985, fast zombies, running zombies that are considered like a modern zombie thing.
John Russo was a collaborator with George Romero on the original Night of the Living Dead. Once that picture was made, they split and made different companies, each with the idea of continuing to make zombie sequels. George went on to make Dawn of the Dead. John wrote the story Return of the Living Dead. A producer named Tom Fox picked up the rights to make the film and decided, no, we want another script, didn't like Russo's story at all. So he approached Dan O'Bannon, who started with John Carpenter with Dark Star back in the early 70s. He also wrote Blue Thunder, Dead and Buried, and one of the most terrifying horror films ever created. You might have heard of it. It was called Alien. They let him write the script, and everyone fell in love with it. And after the original director slated to take on Return of the Living Dead, Tobe Hooper had to back out, the producers asked Dan O'Bannon, and he agreed to direct this script that he had created. And the rest is history.
Let me ask you a question, kid. Did you see that movie, Night of the Living Dead?
Yeah. That's the one where the corpses start eating the people, right? Sure. What about it?
Did you know that movie was based on a true case?
Oh, come on, you're shitting me, right?
I ain't never been more serious in my life.
That's not possible. I mean, they showed zombies taking over the world.
And again, my favorite scene in the movie, telling the tale. And this one gets to evoke the previous film doing so. And the way he sells it, I mean, I'm going to refer to him continually as the Arbor Drug guy.
Frank.
But he sells that whole story. He says, you've ever seen Man of the Living Dead? And most times when a prequel or another movie gets referenced in so blatant a fashion, it's cheesy. This hooks us.
Well, and you know what's neat, too, is, you know, at the time I saw this, say, 86, 87, that ballpark, this was the first zombie movie I had ever seen. But I knew exactly what he was talking about, even at that young age, about Night of the Living Dead, because it, even at that point, was so deeply ingrained in our culture.
We all knew the first, with the opening scene with Barbara.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Stop it! You're ignorant.
If you haven't seen the movie, we know that Black and White Cemetery sequence.
Yes.
I mean, it's become so ingrained.
And it's so parodied.
Yeah.
You know.
So you get the tale told at the beginning, and when we were watching it, I'm thinking, Brian must be loving this part, because he loves when the tale is told.
That's my favorite part of a horror film, the telling the tale.
Back in 1969, in Pittsburgh at the VA hospital, there was a chemical spill, and all that stuff kind of leaked down into the morgue, and it made all the dead bodies kind of jump around as though it was alive.
What chemical?
2,4-5-trioxin, it's called.
So how come you know about it?
What typical army fuck-up. The transportation department got the orders crossed. And they shipped those bodies here. Instead of to the Darrow Chemical Company.
So it's his first day on the job at the UNITA Medical Supply Warehouse, and Frank shows Freddy these containers in the basement that allegedly have the bodies from the original Night of the Living Dead. And I know what you're thinking. Nothing good can come from this.
Hey, these things don't leak, do they?
Leak? Hell no. These things were made by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
Oh, fuck!
Hey, these things don't leak, do they? Leak? No, these things are built by the U.S. Army
Corps of Engineers.
Bam! And then the movie, that when that music kicks in, you're like, okay.
And I had him track it down for me a couple of years ago because I couldn't find it anywhere.
Yeah.
The trioxin theme is burned into my mind from this movie. Like,
it's funny, we were being videotaped while we were watching this, because Cash and I were both sitting there like dancing. You can't not move. You can't sit there like perfectly still watching that. Your head starts bobbing. You're like, yeah, this is, where did this go? You know, it's just, it's the funnest music ever.
It was scored very well, and all the little cuts of audio, like when they do the "Do you wanna party?" That's perfect.
It had almost so that 80s synth feel that Lady Hawk had. Remember that wonderful synth music? It was like you could only have in the '80s.
The Moog. the abuse of the Moog synthesizer.
Yep.
I like when they actually come out of their stupor there. They come upstairs and they're choking on like their own saliva, and they can still smell the shit. They play that so well, I can almost smell the stench with them, you know what I mean?
Are we going crazy?
No, it's that crap on the tanks! That goddamn chemicals! It's all over everything!
Stupid asshole!
Watch your tongue, boy, if you like this job!
Like this job!
Think, think!
Watch your tongue, boy, if you like this job! Like this job!
Yeah, it's a great, great scene.
It was written so well. And the mania in there was like, oh, we gotta think, what are we gonna do?
How funny it is that it smells so bad to the point where we believe that they're on set smelling something horrible, and they reach for that Lysol can, and they're just trying to... What's that gonna do?
What time does Freddy get off?
10 o'clock.
I ain't sitting here 2 fucking hours.
Oh, we could always go drive around.
I don't got gas. You want to buy some gas, idiot?
I was kidding. We could go fool around in there for a while.
You mean that cemetery? Oh, let's do that.
Because in the '80s, every gang had to have a ghetto blaster, bandanas, ripped jeans. There was a typical '80s gang look that was in every.
These guys go a little further.
Yeah,
it's
this isn't like Short Circuit 2 with like Los Lobos and the Latino gang.
This was like to me, it was like a gang, the likes of like Bill Paxton and Terminator. Those three guys that were hanging around the telescope,
right,
with the wild hair and the tracks on the face. This was like that kind of gang.
So there's
in a different setting at the same time.
These guys chop switchblades and pull them out. We're gonna cut you. Yeah.
They had weapons.
You wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
Oh great, here's your friend and mine.
Hey, fuck you, ball buster.
So while Freddy's friends are partying in the cemetery next door, he and Frank have to call their boss, Bert, to come help sort out the situation they've caused, and he's not a happy camper.
You did what? You opened it, you stupid moron, you idiot. What's the matter with you, Frank? Haven't I always told you never to even go near those goddamn tanks?
What are we going to do, Bert?
I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to be sued by the Darrow Chemical Company. I'm going to be investigated by the government. I might become very famous, Frank. I might even lose my business. I might even go to jail, goddammit. That's what I'm going to do.
Gallagher, he showed up in a couple of movies in the 80s, and then he disappeared.
His big thing was, what, the westerns that he did?
Yeah, but, I mean, around this time, he did Return of the Living Dead, and he did The Father of Mark Patton and Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2. This was, like, within 1 year, he was in both those movies, and they were both great horror movies. And then he disappeared. You never saw him again. He was in three of those Feast movies, who, admittedly, I've never seen any of them, but apparently there's these three movies called Feast that he plays this bartender in, and I've never seen him. But other than these two movies, I can't think of anything else that's well-known that he was in.
In that movie, they destroyed the brain to kill him. Is that what they did?
The brain, right!
Yeah, let me know how you make out with that.
What the hell's going on, Bert? The brain! The brain!
I hit the fucking brain!
Up until the Return of the Living Dead, if you had a zombie and you destroyed the brain, it went down. That was it. That was the canon. That was the rule. This movie takes that canon, that theory, crumples it up, and throws it out the fucking window. It's demonstrated time and time again that no matter what you do to these things, unless you absolutely destroy every bit of it, they will just keep coming for you.
You can't kill those mothers. They're already dead. You gotta understand they're not living creatures. They're animated. I mean, you can chop them up into pieces and pieces will still come after you.
And what a game changer that it was. I mean, like I said earlier, if you ask anybody to do an impression of a zombie, what do they immediately do? They do the brains thing. And this was the movie that started that. Yeah,
popularized, you know what I mean? The idea, for sure.
All the zombies up until this point were slow,
and
dumb.
And ate bodies.
And ate flesh. They ate, you know, whatever they can get their hands on. This movie, they brought in the whole, we just eat brains, talking zombies, fast zombies, zombies that have problem-solving capabilities, they're sure. intelligent. It started a whole legacy, a brand new legacy of the zombie
film. I think
genre.
It's the ultimate, I should say, zombie film. I think it's, you know, it covers all the angles, really.
Speaking of angles and curves, did we mention that this film featured the lovely Linnea Quigley in one of her most popular roles ever?
Do you ever fantasize about being killed?
She is just super to look at, though, isn't she?
Even dead. Yep.
She is just super.
Yeah, Linnea Quigley on the tombstone dancing naked.
First, they would tear off my clothes.
Let's get some light over here. Ash is taking off her clothes again.
Let's get the roof. And she was like completely shaved, and this was like 1984.
Well, and they'll touch on that too in the documentary, that they became so freaked out. The producer came on set and saw her completely stark naked and went, nope. So they took her back into the makeup trailer and like made a Barbie snatch for her, where there's no, it's just flat and there's nothing going on. There's no cleave there. So just.
You can see the lips on the tombstone.
Yeah, they Barbied her snatch up for the rest of the movie, and you can see it in the scene where she's walking towards the camera when she's all fucking zombied up.
Linnea Quigley plays this punk named Trash, who actually prophesizes her own death in the movie. When the fit hits the shan, she comes back as one of the most memorable and sexy zombies you've ever seen. But let me tell you something. Watching her shake those sweet nubbins up there on that tombstone in road flare light is something to behold.
Thanks, buck Sean. Naked.
On a tombstone in road flare
and
light.
And the whole scene, too, like starting when she's leaning up against the tombstone with, Miguel?
Yeah.
Telling him how she wants to be killed and, you know, got her legs open and rubbing her thighs and stuff and letting you know that she's getting right into it thinking about this and that turns her on. And I remember being a kid and kind of being really confused by that. Like, this is, you know, that's a fucked up person right there. And then, oh my God, she's completely naked and holy shit is she hot and she's dancing to a sexy song. Everyone's loving it, you know.
It can't be a coincidence that some of the best horrors from the 80s had Linnea Quigley cookie in it. It just can't be a coincidence. And speaking of cookies, New just made us a batch.
What is this?
Oh, cookies.
Did you make cookies?
Oh my God. Oh, cookies. Thank you, Nude.
Wait, don't do that,
cookies. And they're warm.
And you know, guaranteed this is the first movie I ever saw full frontal female nudity in.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Linnea Quigley, it's going to be hard to meet her and not tell her. You know, I was looking at your box when I was way too young.
I beat up to you so many times as a child.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
But I would. Are you kidding?
Yeah,
no woman through the 80s and into the 90s had a shaved bush. None. Zero.
She ruled the 80s only because she allowed herself to be filmed absolutely like nothing.
And, you know, she could act too. You know, and she was...
I love her.
She's cute, she's bubbly, good personality, you know, she kills it on set.
You will see Linnea Quigley at a convention.
Yeah.
Yeah, she makes the convention appearances. I've seen some of my colleagues interview her, so she's always happy to talk to the fans.
I would be kind of starstruck to meet her.
What's the matter? Does it make you nervous?
Frank, Bert, and Freddy are forced to cut up this yellow corpse that comes alive in the warehouse and just won't fucking die. They bring the bags over to the mortuary next door and try to trick Ernie, the embalmer, into thinking it's rabid weasels in the bag so he'll burn them up in the crematorium. And this Ernie guy, played brilliantly by Don Calfa, just screams ex-Nazi. And he's not buying their story, so they're forced to show him what's really in the bags, and a severed arm gets a hold of him before he even gets a chance to rationalize what the hell is going on.
And he did a hell of a job.
Oh yeah, he was probably my favorite character in the movie.
He's a Nazi.
He's an old Nazi. He's got to be. That's why he's got the Walther pistol. He's listening to the German music. He's
they got even, him around even the makes, ovens.
He even makes a little. There's a little line in German. I don't know. He's they kind of cut to him for a second, and he says, "This is."
It's coming down like ein betrunken Soldat.
Ein betrunken Soldat.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Guess your miracle trend.
Nine.
As fun as this movie is, there are a few suspenseful moments that chill you just a bit, and one of them is when Tina, Freddy's girlfriend, goes to find him at the warehouse. They've already gone to the mortuary at this time, and before you know it, she's in the basement with the Tar Man.
Who's there?
When the Tar Man comes out, and what does she do? She flees. She runs up the stairs, and she hits that third fucking stair, and she falls through, and she's trying to pull herself up a bit, because that's what you would do.
And she sees him.
And the thing's coming up behind her, so she lets herself go. Now this thing is covering her exit. That was beautifully written, you know, because she did what she was supposed to do. She wasn't this dumb idiot.
And she got hurt for real on that shoot.
Yeah. The Tar Man, to this day, is probably one of the most...
The eyes work on the Tar Man, but I think the overall look, it's almost cartoonish.
The guy who played him, too, if you look him up on the guy IMDb, he's like a legitimate actor.
He's a puppet. He's a puppeteer. He used to work for Jim Henson.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, he's a puppeteer.
But he had the movement down pat that... flopping around, you know, like there is not much meat left on those bones.
But there's like part animatronic, part actor, because that whole facial structure was fake. That was not his face. That was, and neither was the tongue. That was all, I think, parts, right?
Absolutely. He was trapped inside that suit. That's for sure.
But the moment she barricades herself in that cabinet and starts looking around and it starts using the winch and the chain to get her out, you're thinking, oh my God, this fucking thing
But
knows.
That's, like I said, this is something Romero's probed a lot since Day of the Dead.
You know, when I first saw the look of the Tar Man there, it grabbed me, but at the same time, instantaneously, I knew it wasn't real, because it just didn't look real. It looked bizarre.
In the 80s, man, that looked so fucking scary.
What? I'll tell you what it reminded
All the stuff in this movie, like, when they pickaxe the cadaver in the head and all that shit, like, all of those effects freaked me out as a kid really bad.
But I mean, I saw the face of the Tar Man, it immediately reminded me of UHF. Remember Philo at the end of the movie when he turns his home planet? Is that same kind of bug-eyed, bizarre look? I think it felt to me more like a nightmare, because it has that kind of logic.
And it's a great nightmare.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of humor in it. It's got a few creepy moments. It's got a few moments where the gore is disgusting. You know, it's not over the top. And what
I don't know, when it bites on the Mohawk guy's head and that blood coming out, that's pretty over the top, man.
You see his head come apart like fucking icing on a cake moving, you know what I mean? Like, oh my God.
That's our friend, the Tar Man guy.
Is that heart gone, Ernie?
It's all burned up.
Are you sure?
Right up the chimney.
God damn, so relieved. We're home free, Frank. We got it made. You saved our ass, buddy boy. And I owe you one. God damn!
Yes, you do.
Hold on a second. Yeah, they burn up the corpse in the oven, but in doing so, the 245 trioxin that infested the corpse has now gone up the chimney into the sky, mixing with these storm clouds, which rains it all down on the neighboring cemetery. You want to take a guess what happens next? Now we've got hundreds of these fast, intelligent, and hungry zombies out there, and here's the part where the movie shifts to that formula we all know and love. They're out there, we're in here, and if we fail to keep them out, then we're all dead.
Man, look, you gotta lock all your doors and your windows and call the cops out there!
What? Who's out there?
Do you hear that?
What?
Shut up and listen, man!
What is it? It's dead people screaming!
What is dead people?
Yes, they came from out of the ground, and they're after us!
Out of the ground?
ground.
The horrible realization that it can't ever end well.
Yeah.
Zombie movies can't. There's no way. It doesn't end well ever.
Why, what the hell's going on out here?
Mister, that graveyard out there is full of people coming out of the ground.
Yes, mister, they're out there, and there's one of them in that warehouse on the other side of the graveyard.
Which warehouse?
The medical supply
house. Oh, shit!
And they're...
God damn!
All right, I think things are getting out of hand.
Mister, there's 100 of those things out there.
100?
This is it. This is our world now, and the rest of the world is fucked.
Yeah. And I think that you'll like the resolution in this film, because it's extreme and it's pretty plausible.
Remember Frank and Freddy? They breathed in the toxin at the beginning of the movie? They're not doing so well.
You have no pulse. Your blood pressure is 0/0. You have no pupillary response, no reflexes. Your temperature is 70 degrees. Because technically, you're not alive.
You saying we're dead?
Well, let's not jump to
conclusions. Are you saying we're dead?
Look, obviously, I didn't mean you were really dead. Dead people don't move around and talk.
Yeah, they're pretty fucked. And the paramedics can't help them because they just got waylaid outside by a pack of undead in a very memorable scene. And since the zombies can't get inside to where the brains are, they're smart enough to get on the radio and call in for more.
I'm in distress. Send more paramedics.
Ooh, baby, your ass for Eater Home 10. The Hodads and Grammy say you reach top and so do the dead.
Watch out!
Hey!
Watch out! Don't go over there!
Don't be fine!
They're gonna kill everybody that comes here.
Sounds like they're getting in anyway. Poor Scuzz gets munched by this decrepit green woman zombie, which forces them to cut her in half because she's blocking the window that they have to board up again. And once they do, they take a unique opportunity to tie down this sentient torso and interrogate it.
So, another element of this movie, which I find to be a disturbing staple in a lot of horror films and a lot of different places, really old tits. If I have to see really old tits, that's disturbing.
Hey, those were the worst tits that have ever been on camera.
I'll
even
tell you,
Kathy Bates.
The number of times that this has happened, it started even back then, Disney's Fantasia, those harpies. It gets me every friggin' time. I was like, God.
So well, those are the greenest tits you've seen.
Oh, yeah. You're on the table there.
You're obviously referring to the woman half zombie that's all fucking decomposed.
Yeah, laying on the opera, on the
and when
table.
She's a screaming for brains and her fucking spine
and the
tail
that,
is hitting the table,
and
the metal
fact that
table.
Her hair, her old hair, like is stained partly red from where it touched the blood.
Yeah.
I mean, what a great detail.
And well, and then you had the spinal fluid that was slowly oozing out of the end of
and
the...
And you notice the tail would... Yeah, that's right. The spinal cord, almost like a tail flipping
around.
Yeah,
and it was hitting the table. She's like, brains, back and forth. And when I was a kid, man, that fucking stuck with me. And I'm sure I had nightmares about that shit.
Shut up!
Because, I mean, even though she's never really a threat from that point on in the movie and she's kind of harmless,
right?
It's so fucking creepy. Because you know the moment you undo those fucking ropes, coming back after you, crawling across the floor.
They really are creating hell on earth with this scenario because they understand that dying sucks. And being in that state of perpetual death where all you can do is feel nonstop torment and pain.
Except for when you're eating brains.
And only do that, yeah, but eventually the world's gonna run out of brains once you eat all the people, so I mean, this is hell on earth.
Yeah.
Eating brains. How does that make you feel?
It makes the pain go away.
The work that went into that, because you get a lot of good close shots of it. It's not like they obscure it in any way.
No, it's in there.
And you get clear shots, and you know, those blue eyes, and that blonde hair stained with the blood.
Just a little bit of stained blood in the hair just sells it for me.
But it's that fucking spinal cord banging on the fucking steel table.
Fluid.
You know, just the I mean, the voice is off-putting in and of itself. The brains, because... She was calm for a bit, and then the shit started to hit the fan around her, and you could just... She was being whipped into a frenzy by it, you know? Plus, she had probably, you know, gotten whatever she got out of Scuzz's brains, and then she was starting to hurt again.
Yeah, she was fiending again.
Yeah, that half-zombie was pretty freaky, but she's got nothing on the stubby zombie.
Well, and how about the little floppy midget zombie?
Oh my god.
The little freak zombie?
Every time I watch this movie, that freaks me out. That almost borders on exploitative there, because you can tell they used a real...
little person.
For that, like, little stubby legs. I don't know if that was mentioned, but when he closes the door and is like, "Yeah," you can't tell that it's a small person until he fucking shoots him.
Yeah.
And then he flies back and like
rolls over.
He's barely got little stumps for legs. And sure enough, Ernie goes running. And you see this fucking thing
hauling ass after him.
Like, oh my god.
Because, come on, you saw that running at you in the dark, you'd be fucking freaking out. Even though you could totally punt it away.
It wouldn't have to be a zombie. Just, you know, midgets in general would scare the hell out of me.
That was a nice touch that they put that in there.
First, I got a really fucked headache. Then, in my stomach started cramping up. Now my arms and legs are cramping.
Let's take a look.
The actor who plays Freddy is a guy named Tom Matthews, and we watch him deteriorate throughout the movie as the toxin slowly turns him into a zombie. And his performance in the film shines, and that's saying a lot since he's teamed up with an ultimate cast that's in Return of the Living Dead.
Another really cool part in that is when they're locked in the chapel, and she's, you know, cradling Freddy in her arms, and he's very clearly on his last legs. He's foaming out the mouth.
He's got rigor mortis been setting in for a while.
Frank's laying there foaming at the mouth and just hands like this. He's laying.
And those screams of pain, they really sell that they're
in pain. They did. And that you get to see the moment where he dies.
The eyes roll into the back of his skull.
And then he's back almost immediately. And now he understands.
Yeah, I can finally see the one thing that can end this world of pain and suffering.
Live.
You're fucking brains! Give it to me!
You know, and he played it so well, because you get that sense that he's, oh my god, he's suffering, he's dead. Oh my god, he ain't dead, you know, and it's a beautiful moment, it really is, and he sells it. He sells it all the way. And I've said this, I'm sure, on tapes tonight, I can't imagine how this guy didn't get way juicier roles after this film, because he's a really fine actor.
I haven't seen him in, there's only three titles including this one that I can remember him being in. Return of the Living Dead, right after this he played Tommy Jarvis in Friday the 13th Part 6, and then he played Marion Faith in Nemesis about 5-6 years later. I don't know what else he's done after that.
Mr. Matthews is now the owner of a construction company, so I'm fairly certain he's doing okay.
But yeah. It was cast so well with those senior actors. You know, the one that played Frank, and the one that played the mortician, and then Bernie. They were all high-end actors.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that they could have wimped out and got just any Joe Blow shit actor to play any of those roles.
Yeah.
You know, and they took a lot of gambles on the young people that played those roles that were nobodies. Miguel Nunez was living in his car at the time.
Yeah, he was homeless
at the time, living in a shelter.
Spider.
Yeah. And, you know, but those guys, they made sure they got good actors that were professionals. And, you know, Clu Gulager came in having not even read anything with them. Like, he went cold onto the sets and killed it.
Yeah, they got him at the last moment.
Yeah.
They originally wanted Leslie Nielsen to play Bert.
Bert and the Mortician, I thought, were really great characters because they kept trying. They never gave up. Mm-hmm. They were never defeatist. They didn't wimp out at any point. They weren't like, game over, man. You know, it never happened.
It's that generation, right? They're like touching on that generation of men, it's that, like, greatest generation.
That's it, where they're like, so this poor middle-aged guy who runs a warehouse, and like, we have to get to that phone, but there's one of those nasty creatures down there, picks up a bat, well, just knock his damn head off.
Spider, open the door.
I'm gonna knock his goddamn block off.
I mean, like, that's just it. I'll just do what has to be done. There's no questioning it, no, you know, debate, no nothing. This has to happen.
That's it.
Give me the damn baseball bat.
Straight line. That's point A to point B.
And we can't forget that sexy minx, Jewel Shepherd.
And she worked in a strip club, and that's how they found her. But she
Jill
didn't want to
be Jill Shepherd, yeah.
Jill Shepherd.
She's been battling cancer for a while now.
Who is very hot also, yeah. And did take her clothes off a ton on film back in the day.
Yeah, and you know what? To be honest, I don't think I've ever seen her naked.
Oh, I have.
I can't think of another movie that I saw her in besides this one, to be honest. But I do know, like, I've looked her up on IMDb, and I can see the titles that she was in. Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
There's some decent naked pictures I've read on that internet. If you're listening, Jewel, we love you.
Yeah, give me the police. It's an emergency, operator!
Sorry, Bert, but the police can't help you.
First of all, mister, what the hell is going on there? I lost a dozen good men, and nobody can tell me jack shit!
Look, a bunch of people in the cemetery who are stark, staring, mad, and they'll kill you and eat you if they catch you. It's like a disease. It's like rabies, only faster. It's a lot faster. That's why you got to come in here right now and get us the hell out of here right now. Please, please!
Just a minute. I can't hear you. There's a lot of noise out here.
Oh, shit!
Oh, no!
Stop the fucker!
Stop it! Stop it!
What is it?
The cops, they got the cops. That means they're breaking out of the barricade. Jesus Christ.
By the end of the movie, all seems lost. It looks like nothing will stop this zombie outbreak, and it's a real shame too. The cast of this movie is chock full of characters that you generally like and would love to see survive, but even though I won't tell you the ending, I will say that it's not good for anyone. But the power of the script allows you to forgive Mr. O'Bannon as he lays waste to the characters that you've grown to love. And with respect to Mr. Romero, Lucio Fulci, Stuart Gordon, Peter Jackson, and all the other talented filmmakers who have taken a stab at this subgenre, The Return of the Living Dead outshines them all with a great script, a perfect cast, good gore. It's 90 minutes of pure entertainment that will always remain one of our favorites from the 80s.
You know what? It's a nostalgic treat, this film, because it brings me back to a time, like I say, in the 80s when horror films could be fun. It gave you the scare, the gore, but it was never serious or morose, and it was never over the top. It was enjoyable. You had a good time watching a horror film. It is such a perfect example of that age. I mean, it has to be high marks. It was, you know, unbelievably fun. It will continue to be fun. And it will, I'm sad to say, probably continue to be one of those rare horror films, because the way horror seems to be going these days, we're never going to have that mixture of horror and, you know, just silliness, just having a good time.
Well, you know, it would be hard for me to give it any negative marks in any way, man. It's a solid film, top to bottom. Performances are great. Effects are great. Script was awesome. The movie's a little bit self-aware. It's a little winky-winky with me. I like that, you know. I want a movie to pander to me. I'll be the first guy to say that. Give me what I want. This movie gave me everything I wanted. And it gave me everything I wanted when I was 12. And now that I'm 39, same deal, man.
Whether there's zombies on the screen or just the actors, no matter what's going on, it's entertaining.
Absolutely.
It's entertaining from front to back. It's 90 minutes of bliss.
Inspired performances all the way around.
That's right.
If you like full frontal female nudity, zombies, and laughing, then you'll like this movie. I mean, it's that simple. If you know, tits and pussy on a cute chick doesn't offend you, and gore doesn't offend you, then this will be you will like this film.
I'm only offended by withered tits.
Didn't ruin the movie for you.
No.
We'd like to thank John Russo for conceiving the story, Tom Fox for putting the production together, Dan O'Bannon, who died a couple years ago, for writing the screenplay and directing this picture. Big thanks to Tom Matthews, Clu Gulager, James Cairn, Don Calfa, Linnea Quigley, Jules Shepard, Beverly Randolph, John Philbin, Miguel Nunez, Brian Peck, Mark Venturini, and everyone involved in creating this film. You all certainly outdid yourselves. Oh, and by the way, spoiler alert.
Hey, listen. You hear anything? Nina.
Do you wanna party?
that's the end of the Return of the Living Dead show. Thanks again for joining us. We hope you enjoyed it. We've got our 20th show coming up. The remake of Evil Dead is coming soon. We're going to go check that out next week. Who knows? Maybe it'll knock our socks off, but I'm not too optimistic. We'll have to wait and see. And until next time, for all of us here at Horror 101, this is Cash Wampum saying there's a horror movie out there that's going to scare the shit out of you, and we're going to help you find it right here on Horror 101, Educating Your Fears.